Oh, hey, how are you? Great to hear. Yeah, come in. Make yourself comfortable. Like a drink? Sure. There you go. Welcome to the Tech Lounge. Shall we begin? Welcome to the Tech Lounge with me, Christian Chiller. This episode is something a little bit different in many different ways, actually. Firstly, Kate is joining me. Kate Lawrence, who usually we have the discussion show, is joining me for an interview show because the subject is Jessica Balladad of Feel for Your Life. She's a solopreneur, an entrepreneur that created a breast cancer examination app and advocacy program. So I wanted to have someone alongside me who maybe understood the subject more than I ever could. It's also a little different because it's not as technical, maybe, as my normal subjects, but I thought it was definitely a subject worth investigating. So before we begin, first, a word from a sponsor. If anyone ever asked me for advice on a tool for creating long-form texts, be that fiction or non-fiction, books, PhDs, book collections, scripts, I always recommend Scrivener. It's a very flexible tool. It offers all sorts of features around the core writing experience to help you facilitate, plan, and so many other things for your works. My first novel was written in Scrivener, and my second and third are being written in it. And my current nonfiction book is also, I'm also using Scrivener. So this is one recommendation where I really am using it. If you want to get your own copy, and Scrivener is not a subscription application, it's a one-off fee that, frankly, you get a lot of value from. It's less than 100 euros, and I think I've been using the same version for a few years now. So it's very good value. Head on over to go.christianchiller.com/Scrivener and enjoy your new focused writing experience. Today I'm joined by Jessica from, I think you're representing Feel for Your Life. Yeah, I think that's the name of the company, the product, the organization, whatever we want to call it. And confusingly, for anyone who listens to the show semi-regularly, I'm actually joined by Kate as well. She normally joins on different episodes, not interviews. And I wanted to bring Kate along because Jessica was talking about a topic that I don't feel completely qualified to talk about. So Jessica, tell us what it is that you do with Feel for Your Life, and then we'll dig into it from there.
So I'm a 6-year breast cancer survivor, and a self-exam saved my life when I was 33 years old. In the United States, screenings are only available for women generally at the age of 40 or above. I've heard in European countries and even Canada and Australia, it's actually 50 and above.
That's right.
50. Yeah. So I am a big advocate for self-exams, screenings as well, but for women under the ages of 50 and 40, where we're seeing those increases in breast cancer diagnoses, I'm a huge advocate for self-breast exams. And that's what saved my life. I had just gone to the doctor for my well woman's exam, and she found a lump and didn't tell me about it because she thought I was actually too young for breast cancer at 33 years old, even in spite of my family history. So long story short, it was breast cancer. I did chemo, radiation, the double mastectomy, the whole shebang. And then during the pandemic, when women were missing their screenings, I thought a self-exam is what saved my life. I need to do something about this. So I created Feel for Your Life, an app. I used my quarantine time to learn about app development, and I created something that would show women how to perform a self-exam, let her track and monitor her progress, and set monthly reminders. And this year, I created an AI feature in the app that will take a woman's pathology reports, translate them into terms that she understands, and give her questions to ask her medical provider about her results so that she's not left in the dark and she can better advocate for her care.
Okay. And just for my benefit. So firstly, I thought maybe you had AI in 2020, which would have been very forward thinking of you. But so up until at the moment, what is the general self-exam process? Like what do people typically do or have or try
to do? So there are three different ways based on what the National Breast Cancer Foundation says. And it's always best to check with your doctor. But how I would do mine is I would look at myself in the mirror. Are there any changes that I can see from both sides? Like, does one look different than the other? Is one bigger than the other? Do I have any puckering, any dimpling? Do I have any rashes? Is there anything that just looks abnormal or different to me? Then I would get in the shower, and then I would just, after I'm done bathing myself, I would go over both sides in a circular motion, starting at the very top, going all the way around and throughout the entire breast on both sides. When I was doing the self-exam that found the lump when I was 33, I had come around. I started at the 12 o'clock position. And if you think of your chest or your breast as a clock and go around to about 3 o'clock position, that's where I found the lump. That's where my heart sank and I stopped. And I'll never forget what it felt like. It was really firm, very dense, and it wouldn't really move. I could wiggle it a little bit, but it really wouldn't move. But that's how I would do it in the shower. And then I would get out of the shower, lay down on my bed, put my arms up over my head, and just go over the same areas again to see if I found any lumps, bumps, or abnormalities that I needed to have addressed.
I think you raised a couple of really good points that I've heard from other women who've been diagnosed with breast cancer at a younger age, i.e. below 40, for example. One is that their symptoms were dismissed due to age, and secondly, their family history was dismissed. Can you tell me a little bit about the why? Why is this happening?
I wish I had all the answers to that, but I'm going to tell you what I think it might be in the United States. So here we have private insurance. You have to buy your insurance if you want access to it. So, well, that's for most people. And then there are stipulations. But I think what the medical provider thinks about is, if I find a lump, and this is a young woman, she's got dense breast tissue, she may need additional screening. Can she afford to pay for this? And is her insurance going to pay for it? And if it doesn't, is this going to come back on me in some way? Is that medical provider going to get reprimanded from their supervisors saying, hey, you are allowing these women to have biopsies and additional screenings done and they can't pay. So why do you keep, you know, referring them to this? They're not paying. We're losing money. So I kind of wonder if there is a pressure there from the hospital administration or people above them, because they think they're not going to get paid and it's costing them money in some way. And there's this myth that there are overdiagnoses and it's making women anxious, but that's not true at all. Studies have shown that women actually want to know. They'd rather be told there's a chance and have it cleared than to just live with the worry and wonder if they're doing enough for themselves. So I think it's just a really complex issue, and I don't want to beat up on the hospital systems, the doctors or anything, because I know the systems are overrun and it's not perfect. But if I had to guess, something tells me it's somehow linked to that.
And Kate, can I ask you a question? As I know you're Australian and lived in Germany for 10 years. Have you had similar experiences in both those places, or is it slightly better, slightly worse?
I've only had different exams in Germany, which the gynecologist does twice a year.
Right. Okay, twice a year. Okay. And that's just
while you're there to do your other things, like your pap smears and stuff.
Okay.
And that's probably age-related as well.
Is there an impression of ever like, oh, you don't need this or et cetera? No, it's always just...
No, not at all. No, it's just standard. Okay. And they ask every time I go in if there's any history of cancer.
Okay. So you think it's better then than what Jessica was describing?
I think it's... Okay. But I think there's a reality is that women's symptoms are often dismissed, as all women are made to feel like they're overreacting, or maybe they're, you know, oh, you've been looking on the internet if women are presenting with symptoms for a health condition. Yeah. And I think, you know, what an app does particularly the tracking, which we'll get into, the, you know, knowledge is power and information is power, and having something tangible that you can show people is, you know, one of the ways that you can help advocate for yourself in those kind of situations, I think.
Yeah. So let's come to the app. I mean, people have unfortunately found themselves in the same situation probably thousands of times in the past. What motivated you to want to to take that frustration further into creating something that helps solve that problem.
Like you said, I knew women were frustrated with the medical gaslighting and being ignored and having to make a case to the medical provider. And it's not so much them. The medical provider goes up against hospital administration and insurance companies, and they have to make the case to them to prove that their patient deserves the care that they want to provide to the patient. So I thought, well, if you had a record of tracking and monitoring your progress of doing self-exams, if you had a family history, if you could keep notes of that, if you had it in one place where you could go back and reference and show your doctor, hey, these are my self-exams. This is what I've been doing. This is what happens this month and this month. I found something different. This is not my normal. This is not regular for me. Something needs to be done about it. That helps the practitioner be able to make the case. Hey, insurance company, make sure you cover my patient's screening because this is what I'm finding for her and she needs to get this addressed. And it may need, you know, if we find something early, it's going to end up costing you, insurance company, less money if we can get ahead of it. So if the patient knows how to communicate with her medical provider on what she needs, that helps the medical provider and it gets it covered. And she has the assurance that she's doing everything that she can for herself.
Absolutely. And one thing that always comes up for me is when I talk to a lot of startups doing health tech, particularly a wearable or an app, something where it's tracking or it's data-driven insights, is the challenge of getting that data in a format that will basically comply with the doctor software. So I guess I have a two-part question. The first one is, how digitized healthcare practices, in the US, in your experience already? And secondly, how do you make that data so it's accessible to doctors in a way that they'll actually use it, I guess?
So everything in the app is very secure and you volunteer what you want to put and what you want to keep track of inside of the app. It is not connected to an EHR or an electronic health record here that goes to your medical provider. I do leave it up to the patient to be able to communicate what she finds and what she records and what's best for her or even him to tell their medical provider based on the findings of doing their self-exams. I ask a series of questions that I wish I recorded regularly when I was doing my self-exam since I was 18. And I thought, I want this to be intuitive. I want it to be easy to use. I want it just to be a personal experience for the person who is using it. So it's up to her own self and her own boundaries and what she wants for her goals and her healthcare and her breast health to communicate to the doctor. I want her to have a ton of autonomy in what she's doing and how she uses the app.
I just wondered, just sort of continuing Kate's question a little bit, but out of the technical space. I mean, both of us have no exposure to the American healthcare system, but I listen to a lot of American tech podcasts where it sometimes feels like, you know, the American health system has many issues, but it does feel sometimes that it's maybe a little bit more connected to apps and trackers and things than maybe Kate and I's experience, where especially in Germany, the healthcare system can sometimes be a little bit like, what is this witchcraft you're showing me? So I just wondered, you know, have you had any anecdotes from people taking these self-examinations from your app to doctors and the doctors' reactions, positive or negative to that?
They've been very overwhelmingly positive. My doctors love it. I have gynecologists who have reached out to me saying, I love this. Thank you so much. I've done a lot of national TV in the United States and hear from medical providers from all over who say, thank you so much for this. They love the technology. Anything that you're using to keep track of your health, that's going to help them. Because, I mean, like I said, it helps them help you even more. And we're so much, at least the United States, we're so much of a reactive culture to our health rather than proactive. So this is a step in the direction of being proactive in your health and maintaining that and building better relationships with providers. So they absolutely love it.
Okay. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. And as an app, I mean, I'm curious from a business perspective, where are you taking it? Like, are you looking at it as something where you could fund it or you would get some type of support, financial support?
I do receive financial support from sponsors and deals that I do in different ways. Like if I go and I speak somewhere that's sponsored, the app will be sponsored, parts of the app will be sponsored. I'll create content from the perspective of a cancer patient or a cancer survivor for different organizations. And then I also do a lot of government lobbying and advocacy. Well, it's more so advocacy more than lobbying. There is a paperwork difference on that, but to advocate for rights of patients to break down the barriers of the U.S. healthcare system and insurance companies, the loopholes they exploit to deny care. I do work on that side as well. So it's multifaceted.
Amazing.
I wanted to dig into the new announcements, the AI side of things. I must admit, when I first saw the pitch, because my head has been in this space, I was expecting it to maybe be some sort of photo analysis. Mm. Maybe that's naive of me because now I think about it, I'm not 100% sure if that, how possible that would be with breast cancer. But okay.
So it's not, I got to watch what I say here because there are regulations in the United States and there's a reason publicly that I cannot say that I have an AI that can read imaging publicly. Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
Let's just say there are some things in the works. There are things that I use privately for myself, and actually my cat, it has cancer and I've used it to read his images to advocate for him. And it's been awesome because I've been able to spot things that his radiologist missed and we've worked together on some. So I'll just say regulatory reasons I can't.
There's actually a few apps that are either available or in the works, probably some more in Europe.
Public ones as
that
well.
Are doing this. A quite common one is skin cancer detection, for example, detecting irregularities on people's skin. There's also ones for radiologists who are reading, you know, things on the screen to make that more efficient. So there is a bunch of things happening. But like you say, there is still this, rightfully and for very good reasons, sort of there's a little bit of a separation between wellness and medical.
But actually, what you actually do interests me because I had a slight health issue earlier this year and got some blood tests, which I have a huge fear of needles. So this was a pathetically big deal for me. And then I got back a PDF of results, and actually, it turned out to be something relatively minor and fixable, thankfully. But there was pages and pages of these results where I was like, I don't even know what half of these mean, literally the word, let alone what they actually mean. So something that analyzes those and gives a little bit more insight is actually kind of personally quite interesting as well. I think the question I wanted to know was, as far as I could tell from my experience with the doctor, signs of cancer in the bloodstream seem to be something that at least they gave me was fairly, I don't know, maybe it's just the impression they gave me was fairly clear, but is that not the case? Is it more like that you have to look at trends or something? Or is it that maybe the doctor doesn't tell you everything you need to know? Is that where you're adding?
So I'm not a medical provider, but, you know, again, I can only speak on my experience. I know when my oncologist does test, he's looking for things like my tumor markers, and he's the tumor markers, everybody has them based on how much cancer or inflammation may reflect in that tumor marker reading, it'll show up in the blood. And then you have something called your comprehensive metabolic panel, where they look at your kidneys and your liver functioning and just your body chemistry. And if something looks out of whack there, it could be indicative of metastasis. So you're looking at what the normal range is based on the scale that they give you from your medical provider. And they don't always have time to go over what every single thing means with you. And you get these results, they go to your online portal. In the United States, there's this regulation where medical providers have to give you your results as soon as possible. And sometimes that means getting those results before you get to talk to a doctor. So there are people finding out that they have cancer and they have things wrong with them, and they see something like invasive ductal carcinoma, that's a fancy word for breast cancer, and they're going and they're Googling and it's scaring the crap out of them.
Wow.
And so when I created the AI portion of Fuel for Your Life, which I call Breast Friend AI, part of it was, you know, I wanted the tools and resources I wish I had before and during my cancer diagnosis. Mm. It's so complex and confusing. And you don't know, you can spiral into a panic going through all of these terms and trying to piece them all together. So I thought, well, let me put together something that's going to just lay it all out in plain language and automatically populate questions based on your specific results so that you are ready and that you are prepared and you can reach out and get the answers that you need to make the decisions that are best for you.
Yeah, a question around that. Reading some of the news today about, I guess, the new person in charge of some of the health politics in the US who has some...
Soon to be. Not yet.
Yeah. To be in power. Seems to have some interesting views. And my question is really about, like, when you're talking about AI and LLMs, how do you ensure that you're using good, factual, sound data and analysis rather than something that you may pick up data scraping from a less credible website, shall we say?
Yeah, so I review it constantly. Mm-hmm. I am testing it to see, like, hey, this is coming up, this has come out. Even as regulations change in the United States, mm-hmm. for example, back in September, providers are now required to tell you if you have dense breast tissue based on your mammogram readings. I make sure that it's up to date with that. Mm-hmm. I take feedback from people who have been using it. And, you know, I create the prompts so that it's intuitive to the experience. So I am all about feedback and making sure that the best information is sourced through the AI.
I think the follow-up question to that, whenever we ask anything about AI, is... I guess with any kind of screening, especially around health, you're worried a little bit about false positives and false negatives. I'm not sure if that's even a phrase, but, you know, not showing things that do exist and not showing things that don't exist. And, you know, AI can have a tendency to make things up. What have been the guardrails in place to prevent that? Or does it feed into the general approach to this app that, well, maybe it will, but it still gives you that information to take to a medical practitioner to check?
Yeah, so in the onboarding process for it, whenever you use it, there are disclaimers that, hey, this could be wrong. This is meant to help you. It's not meant to replace your medical provider. It's to work with your medical provider bridge those conversations, to build those better relationships, and to feel more comfortable to reaching out. In fact, you can even use it to look up medical providers within your area, within, you know, a 60-mile or closer range, whatever works with, you know, the insurance that you have. And if you need a second opinion, it'll help you walk through that. It'll give you free options if you don't have insurance, where you can go, what clinics you can use, things like that. So again, I just built it knowing, hey, I wish I had this and I wish I knew about this. So I know I'm not the only person who has gone through this or felt alone. I want to build it so that, you know, a woman feels very comfortable reaching out to a doctor because of what she may use it for.
Yep.
Amazing. And what's next? Like, what kind of, are you looking at adding additional features, or are there other things in the works that you'd like to mention?
Well, it's all about getting the feedback. If people hey, you know, I need help here and here. Now, again, with medical bills and insurance companies, there is some talk about how I can help women maybe navigate that, decipher their medical bills better, find errors in billing where they may be overbilled or charged something that's not there. Kind of experimenting with that a little bit, but we'll see where it goes. I mean, AI is just, it's so fast. Someone could definitely beat me too. But I'm very meticulous in how I do this and approach it. And I'm self-taught in this. So there are smarter people, like I said, who may do this faster than I can. But I'm all about the user experience and making it as easy as possible so that it doesn't take a lot of explaining. And I understand that not everyone is tech savvy. So I want people to be able to these tools and resources as if, you know, they don't have a background in this and feel comfortable with it so that they don't feel like they're lost or being left behind or they're getting overcharged and that, you know, that it's just as accessible for them as well. So we'll see what happens.
Exciting. I mean, I would imagine there's even scope there for partnerships with startups that are working on that specific niche of, you know, error detection in billing and so forth, because I know there's people in that space who may be able to, you know, collaborate with you and, you know, give you more time to work on the other things that other people aren't doing, you know.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, totally.
Mm-hmm. And can I ask, do you have any plans to, I mean, I'm guessing anyone in the world could install it, but I don't know how many of the features are useful to people outside the US, but is there any plans to expand?
I have people all over the world using the app, actually.
Exactly. Yeah. The basics of it, I guess, are universal. But
all over Europe and Australia as well, the Middle East even. That I saw pick up over the summer, which I found like really interesting. India, where they have, you know, I think I read a statistic, there is like one oncologist for every 250,000 people.
Oh my gosh.
Because I've talked to doctors out here who are from India or have India descent and families in India, and they get phone calls all the time, you know, and they're just general practitioners or surgeons, and they're trying to help family and friends of family, you know, back at home. And it's just, they get this information and it helps them advocate and get the help that they may be able to access there. But at least it's a step in the right direction.
Yeah, absolutely.
I actually want to read a quote from one of your reviews that summarizes this quite nicely. I was just looking around.
Thank you.
Living in a conservative state, women's health, especially breast health, was never a focus in the school curriculum, leaving many young women behind the learning curve in preventative health. This app helps bridge the gap with awareness, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, just that, I think it's that aspect where there are, unfortunately, plenty of places where these issues will be ignored or completely mistreated. And this is where something like this can, I think all of us are lucky enough to live in places where there's at least a modicum of treatment and respect for those issues. But there's a lot of places where there aren't. So it can actually help quite
absolutely.
A lot.
Yeah. Speaking into that a little bit, there are, when I was talking to women, when I was making the app, there are three things about women's breasts that we learn. We have them, they have a function, and they need to be covered up. Because I'm also from a very conservative area in the United States. And it's just like, you don't talk about it, you don't touch yourself, you don't. So there is a gap. And I'm very humbled and honored to have learned that. I don't always look at reviews. My DMs get blown up like with feedback generally. But thank you for reading that. But that just kind of affirms like some of the research that I've done.
I just thought I'd have a quick look, mostly to see if I could install it outside of the US, and then just saw that review.
Should be able to.
Nothing was stopping me. It just jumped out at me anyway. So cool. So I think Kate already asked this, but what in terms of updates, we mentioned you want to get more feedback and improve on the current features, but do you have any plans for branching out into other apps or services that are related to women's health, or are you going to keep focus on this for now?
I'm going to keep focus on this for now. I've been approached with some other ideas in other areas of health that I'm kind of exploring, including men's health, some stuff with diabetes, skin cancer, been approached on that.
Yep.
But also, you know, in addition to the app, as I get feedback from people, this, it also enforces the work that I'm doing in the political advocacy space as well. And there's a lot of work to be done. Stuff that is bipartisan, where both sides of the political spectrum do come together on. So it's not a red versus blue thing here in the United States. It's stuff that both sides do want to come together on. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done. And with the change in the political sphere out here, it's we have some challenges, but I'm optimistic about it.
Yeah. Kate, do you have any other questions you want to ask? Okay. So if people are interested, it's feelforyourlife.com. It is, as far as I can tell, it's free.
There's no extra free. Cost. You can download. Right
mm-hmm. Okay.
And we'll put a link to that in the show notes.
Yeah, thank you. Definitely. Then Jessica, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
So that was it. That was our guest today. Thank you very much for joining me in the Tech Lounge. I have been Christian Schiller. If you want to know more about Tech Lounge, head on over to christianschiller.com, or please tell your friends about us. It's quiet and cozy in here, but the more listeners, the merrier. You can find more at christianschiller.com/podcast or in the show notes or episode notes, wherever you found this podcast. Thank you very much for joining me, and you're most welcome next time.